Okay, we're going to begin here on Chav Vav Amud Aleph, three lines down, Amar Abaye. Just to review what we did yesterday, the Gemara continued to discuss the machloket that we saw between Abaye and Rava, and we had before in the Gemara with regards to the machloket between Abaye and Rava, Barhana Habalo Adam Abar Kochod, that person who gets benefit against his will. We had two lashonot in the Gemara. The first lashon of the Gemara was, if he's mechavein, if he intends for that hana'ah, everybody agrees it's asur. That's both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Lo mechavein, if he doesn't have kavana for it, then Rabbi Yehuda is oser. That's the shitato. Rabbi Yehuda who says, davar sheino mitkaven is asur. And Rabbi Shimon says it's mutar. Their machloke between Abaye and Rava is then in efshar and lo mechavein, where he had the chance to avoid it. But he is not mitkaven for it, because davar she'enu mitkaven. There, Abaye says it's mutar, that's Rabbi Shimon l'shitato. And Rava says it's asur, because he says Rabbi Shimon agrees only in a case delo efshar. When it's not possible to avoid it, then he says davar she'enu mitkaven matters. The shlishna batra, in the second lashon, we said that in cases of efshar and mitkaven, so in a case of efshar mitkaven, everybody agrees it's asur. In the case of lo efshar and lo mitkaven, everybody agrees it's mutar. In the case of efshar and lo mitkaven, and lo efshar and mitkaven, there we have the machloket Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. In the case of efshar and lo mitkaven, we have a class machloket. Rabbi Yehuda says asur because it's davar sheinu mitkaven is asur. Rabbi Shimon says it's mutar because davar sheinu mitkaven is mutar. In the case of lo efshar and mitkaven, Rabbi Shimon's going to say it's asur because kavanah matters. And if you're mitkaven for it, it matters. According to Rabbi Yehuda, we have the machloket between Abaye and Rava. Abaye will say it's mutar, because Rabbi Yehuda says mitkaven doesn't matter. It's a case of lo efshar, and therefore it's fine. And Rava says no. Rabbi Yehuda still thinks mitkaven is problematic. He just says when it's a chumra, then lo mitkaven doesn't help you. So that's the difference in the two lishonot. First, we're going to have the Amoraim, Abaye and Rava, bring proofs on their own behalf. And then the Gemara will bring cases that are either proofs to Abaye or Rava or to one of the two lishonot. And they're bringing down cases which seemingly will bring us to a conclusion about this. Amar Abaye, mna aminolo. Where can I prove to you that I'm right? Titanio, we have a brayta. Amru alav Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan zaya yoshev betzilo shel heichal. He was sitting within the shadow of the heichal. V'doresh kol hayom kulo. And he was giving a drasha. He was out in the street that is in front of the Beit HaMikdash. Since the heichal is so high, it has the very deep shadow. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was giving a drasha, and there was no place that could hold all these people in a Beit Midrash, so he did it out on the street. But it would be too hot in the sun, so he picked a place specifically where the Heichal would cast a shadow onto the street. So over here, he's getting a benefit from the Heichal. It's a case, the lo efshar, it's a case where he has no other choice, because there's no other place that can hold him. But he's mitkaven. He intends to get hanah from the Heichal, from the shade of the Heichal. V'hocha, the lo efshar, u'mikaven v'shari. And it is mutar. So here I can prove to you here that in a case where it's not efshar, and you have kavano, that it's mutar to do this. Rava Amar, Rava says, shiny heichal. Heichal is different because the tocho asui. The purpose of the heichal is for its internal piece, not for its external piece. So when you get the shade of the heichal on the outside, that's a byproduct of there being a building here. The real purpose and what the hano of the heichal is the internal part of the heichal inside the heichal. The outside of the Heichal doesn't grant Hanah. That happens to be a byproduct or a secondary item that doesn't have to do with the Heichal directly. And therefore, it's not even a case of a problem of Hana'ah because it's, Rashi claims, Shalo Kedera Hanatan. It's not the normal way to get Hana'ah from it. Tosafot says, where do we know that Me'ilah has a din of Dera Hanatan? Because there's no word Achila that's found by Me'ilah. So Tosafot says, all right, maybe in the end, because we learned it out of Truma from a Gzeirah Shavu, Chet Chet, and by Truma it says Achila, so too by Me'ilah you have this idea of Derech Hanato. So Amar Rava, Mena Me'ilah. Rava says, well, I'll prove my position. Lulin hayu p'tuchim b'aliyat Beit Kodshei HaKodeshim. There were these skylights that came down into the Kodshei HaKodeshim. The Heichal was built with rooms around it, and also an aliyah. It had an upper area above it, and that upper area had trapdoors or ways to get down into the Heichal. They used to take the workers down in a pulley system. So when they had to go in there to do something, Rashi says they had to fix something. Something went wrong, they went in to fix it. So we didn't want them to get benefit from being in there. So how do we do that? We put them into a teva. We put them into a enclosure. And we lower them in specifically to the area that they have to do their work so they can't look around. Now, you could say Kelo Yizonu Einehem is that they shouldn't look at the Shechina, but over here Rashi says the benefit is looking at the beauty of the inside of the Heichal, because that's exactly what the Heichal is built for, the beauty on the inside, and you're not allowed to get Hanoah from that, because that's Me'ila. This is a case where it's impossible. They have to do the fixing. They have to do the maintenance on the Heichal. And they're certainly intending to get benefit when they look around and they're getting the benefit for enjoying it. Then they're Mekavein. V'asur. And it's Asur. And that's why we lower them in these Tevot. And that's why we put them in a position where they can only look at the place that they need to work. Because if you were right about it, let them go down in an open area. They could look around. Why not let them look around? My says, V'tizbara. Are you right about this? V'ama Rav Shimon Pazi, Yama Rav Shimon Ben Levi. Mishum Bar Kapara, Kol, Umar'eh, V'reach, Ein Behem Mishum Me'ila. Kol, the sound of the voices, the sound of the music. Mar'eh, things that you see. V'reach, and smell. Ein Behem Mishum Me'ila. They don't have a din of Me'ila, because all of these items are Dvarim She'ein Behem Mamash. These are things that don't have any substance to them. These are intangible items. And since they're intangible items, there's no concept of Me'ila by intangible items. So, Elamale Asu Bebeit Kodshei HaKodeshim. So, your question or your proof doesn't get off the ground here. What's the problem of Hana over here? They're going to look at the Heichal on the inside. They're going to get a benefit from looking and enjoying it. That's not even a problem of Me'ila. So, why are we stopping from that? Elamale Asu. It's something that the Kodesh HaKodeshim is the holiest place. We want to give it a certain standing. We don't want people going in there willy-nilly and looking around. So we do this in order to preserve the sanctity of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. The Chachamim impose this idea here. But not that there's real Me'ila involved over here. Ikedamre, Amar Rova Menah Me'ila, where can I prove it to you? The Tanya, Amar Mishum Pazi, Amar Mishum Ben Levi, Mishum Bar Kapara, Kol, Umar Evreach, Ein Behem Mishum Me'ila. That all of these three items don't have a din of Me'ila. Me'ilahu Deleka, Hayisureach, Ika. You're right. He says that these three intangible items don't have a din of Me'ila. But they don't have a din me'ilah that you bring a carbon me'ilah, that you have to pay the money back, so on and so forth, all the din me'ilah, but they still have an isur. They're osur min ha-Torah. My love, lo tamenum din bifnim, that's a kohanim. Kohanim who go in to be mishamesh in the heichal, they go to light the menorah, they go to clean out the menorah, whatever the avodah they're doing there, maybe those people inside, they are not allowed to get benefit from looking around. You're right, there's no me'ilah if they look around and enjoy it, but if they look around, there's still an isur. And that'll prove my point, Rava says. There's a case, dolo afshar, they have to be in there to do the avodah. But kamakavim, they have kavanah, and we're saying it's asur. Look, the restriction here is the otan omdim b'chutz. The kohanim are on the outside. The kohanim on the outside are looking in. They don't have to be there. Efshar, they don't have to be there. They could be there. They could not be there. It's an avoidable circumstance. So over there, if they're makavim, then we have a problem. And that's when we say isur ha'ika. That's when we say there's an isur. When there's no me'ila, there's still an isur. That's for those on the outside that have a choice of whether they're supposed to be there or not. Whereas those that are unavoidable, those that have to be inside, even if they're makavim, we would say that it is mutar. So Gufa, the Gemara wants to discuss this principle of Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi. So Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Mishum Bar Kapara, Kol Umarev Reach, Ein Behem Mishum Me'ila. Reach, Ein Bo Mishum Me'ila. Is that really true that the smell, there is no din of Me'ila? V'atanyo. If a bright, I'm a fateh met a ktoret, lita meid ba. If a person puts together the ingredients of the ktoret that's brought on the Mizbeach HaZahav in the Mikdash, you put together those ingredients, if he's doing it to learn how to make that ktoret. Oh, the most rather tzibor, he's making it in order to sell to the tzibor to use in the Mikdash. Patur, that you're allowed to do, that's fine. Now, Riachba, he's making for his own personal benefit to smell it, Chayav, then he is Chayav. V'miriachba Patur. A third party who smells it is Patur, Ella Shema'al. He's Patur from the problem of mixing and putting together the Torah, the Easter that's mentioned in Parshat Ki Tisah, but he's still responsible for Me'ilah, for getting benefit from Kodesh. So here you see that there is a benefit from Kodesh, there is a din of Me'ilah by Reach. How could Rabbi Shimon Pazi say there is no din of Me'ila by Reach? Larma Papa, Kolu Maret, Ein Behem Mishum Me'ila. So he amends the statement to say that the only two items that don't have a din of Me'ila are Kol, or the sound, the music, the voices, and Maret, and things that you see with your eyes. Those intangible items. But when it comes to Reach, Yesh Behem Me'ila, Fish Ein Behem Mamash, those are intangible items. Reach, Lacha, Shetale, Tumrato, Ein Behem Mishum Me'ila. And Reach, after it goes up in smoke, then there's no din in Me'ila. Hovin asit mitzvato, because then you completed the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to burn the ktoret on the mizbeach. If you've done the mitzvah, then the smoke that's coming out afterwards is an after effect of the mitzvah. And there's no din of Me'ila for things that the mitzvah is already done. So once you've done the mitzvah, there is no Me'ila left. So Rashi differentiates between putting the ktoret onto the coals and giving off smell. That'll be problematic, because that's in the point in time where the mitzvah is either being done or before the mitzvah. There you have a problem with Me'ila. When it's already in smoke and it goes up afterwards, then that doesn't have a din of Me'ila because nase mitzvato. That maybe even say Ein Bo Mamash. Now, the Memra. From this, you would conclude, the Kol Hecha that Asit Mitzvoto Ein Bo Mishum Me'ilah. Anytime the mitzvah is done, there's no longer a din of Me'ilah. Varei Trumat HaDeshen. What about Trumat HaDeshen? Trumat HaDeshen is the requirement every morning for the Kohen to go up to the Mizbeach and take a portion of the ashes from off the Mizbeach and place it down next to the ramp of the Mizbeach. The Nased Mitzvata, when you place it down next to the ramp, V'yesh B'mishum Me'ilah, even after you place it down next to the ramp, that's the mitzvah. The mitzvah is taken off the Mizbeach and put it down next to the ramp. And nevertheless, afterwards, there's still a din of Me'ilah. Someone benefits from those ashes on the floor there. They have a Iser Ne'ilah, Dichtiv. You should place them down next to Mizbeach. Shelo Yifazer. Number one, they should be piled together and not scattered all over. They should be placed there and not be removed, meaning that you can't get benefit from them, despite the fact that the mitzvah is done. Because we have here Trumat HaDeshen and Big Day Kuna, which are two psukim that teach you the same din. Any two psukim that teach you the same din, they don't become a binyanav, they don't become a paradigm. If the Torah wants to teach you something, it should tell you it once. If it tells you it once, now I can extrapolate from that item to any other case. If the Torah then tells you the same thing twice, then the Torah is saying these are the exceptions and no longer the rule. If it tells you it once, that's the rule. If it tells you twice, then the Torah is telling you these two are the exception and the rule is otherwise. And that's what they're saying over here. I have Trumat HaDeshen and Big Day Kuna that both have the same din, which is that there is Me'ilah even after the mitzvah is done. Trumat HaDeshen Adamran. We already explained Trumat HaDeshen. Big Day Kuna, Dichtiv. What's the story about Big Day Kuna? These are the Bigadim of the Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim, the white Bigadim that he wore on Yom HaKippurim. It says there in Parshat HaChemot, Ve'ni Chosham, that he leaves them there. Mlameid, Shetu'unim, Giniza. They require Geniza. You're not allowed to get any benefit from them. After using Yom Kippur, they go into Geniza and they may not be used again. So Anicha that Rabbanon, that works well according to Rabbanon Dami Amalei Shetunim Geniza. That they learn from that word of Anicha Sham, that they put them in Geniza and there's no Hana'a. Hello Rabbi Dosa, the Paligalayu. Rabbi Dosa argues on them and says, Ramar, Avaruim Hen Lekoin Ejot. You're right. What does it mean, Inicho Sham? Inicho Sham means that a Kohen Gadol may never use them again. But a Kohen Hejot, who can use normally wears these four Begadim, can now use them for a regular Avoda. So my Nicham Sham, what is a Nicham Sham? Shalish Tamesh Bam, Yom Kippurim Acher. That he may not use them again on another Yom Kippur. So my Ikele Meimar, so according to him, there's no Isur Hana over here, because a Kohen Hejot could use them afterwards, so we don't have our two psukim to come together to be the exception to the rule. So he said, no, we do have two psukim. Mishum Dava Trumat HaDeshen, Ve'egla Arufa, Shneik Tavim Abayim Ke'achad. Because I have this exception by two psukim, Trumat HaDeshen, which we already explained, and Egla Arufa. When you have two psukim that come together, they again are the exception to the rule. They don't set the paradigm. Anich Alamandamar, that works well according to one who says, Eim Alamdim, that they don't teach. Alamandamar Alamdim, the one who says even when you have two together, they still teach, that they are considered to be the rule and not the exception. Michael Amemar, what are you going to say? So let's understand, what's the story by Egla Arufa? By Egla Arufa, it says that Varfo, that you're going to break its neck, Sham, there. So the Gemara learns from the word Sham, that Sham take Vurata, that it must be buried there and left there, and there's an Isra Hana'ah on the Egla Arufa. So despite the fact that you've already done the mitzvah of breaking the neck of the Egla Arufa, nevertheless, there's still a restriction against getting an offer from it, and it must be left and buried on location. So Trumat HaDeshen has that requirement of Geniza, meaning it has to be left there and not get Hana'ah, so does Egla Arufa. So that's Shnei Ketuvim, Abayim Kechad, Eim Lamdim. Those are the exceptions to the rule, because I have two psukim teaching me the exact same din, and that makes them the exception, not the rule. But that's according to the Manda Amar that says when you have two psukim together, that becomes the exception, and not the rule. But there is a Manda Amar in the Gemara in Sanhedrin who says that even when two psukim come, they're the rule, not the exception. So how are we going to explain that according to him? It says, Trei Mi'utei Ktive. These psukim, each one has its own mi'ut associated with it. By Trumat HaDeshen Ktiv Visamo. Samo, meaning in the possessive form, v'samoto. Only Trumat HaDeshen gets this din of being placed there, and nothing else. And also, v'chtiv by Egla Arufa, ha-arufa. So it's this arufa. The arufa has the din of that you have to be placed it over there, but nothing else has that din. So because I have specific mi'utim that are written in each of the psukim, I cannot extrapolate them, or I cannot make them into a paradigm for the other issues in the Torah. And so therefore, even though here in these two cases, I say even though the mitzvah is done, there's still a din of mi'ilah, they are the exceptions to the rule. Either because shnei ketuvim abayim kechad ein melamdim, that's why the exception, or because by each of these psukim, there's a specific word that makes it that it's exclusive to this item and to nothing else. And so therefore, I can't extrapolate from these items. That means anywhere else in the Torah, if the mitzvah is done, there is no mi'ilah. And that's what we're saying here by the Ketoret. But the Ketoret, if the mitzvah is already done, means that it's already up in smoke. Over there, the mitzvah is done and there's no problem of me'ilah anymore. On the other hand, if it's still in its form or its substance, the incense is there and it's burning on the coals itself, then that would be problematic to smell it because there, lo nasit mitzvata. Because at that point, the mitzvah is not done yet. And since the mitzvah is not done yet, you still have a problem with me'ilah. And that will maybe even explain the difference between the Braita and the case of Rav Shimon Pazi, who says that Reyach does not have a din of me'ilah, whereas the Braita seems to indicate it does have a din of me'ilah. We might be able to differentiate it that way. Or you have to read it with the emendation of Rav Papa, which is that Reyach is not in the world of me'ilah. And again, you could say like the Braita, that it's in the world of me'ilah when it's still whole. But once it turns into smoke, it's no longer in the world of me'ilah. Tashma. Hechnisa the Rivaka. He joined the animal into a team of shvarim, into a team of oxen. Vidasha. And because it's with this team of oxen, then it goes ahead and threshes. Kishera. It still remains kasher. Bishvil shetinog vitidosh. If he puts it into the team of oxen in order that it should nurse, as well as it should thresh, psula. That in that case, it's psula. Over here, we're speaking about, most likely, is a para aduma. That's what the Tosefta is speaking about. That's what Tosefot says. We're talking about a para aduma over here. And a para aduma, one of the requirements of para aduma is that it didn't do any work. So in the first case, where it did work, it was unintentional that it did the work because it was put together with a team of oxen, but he didn't want it to do the work. In the second case, when he put it together with the team of oxen, he intended it for the tinok, but also to tidosh. He did have in mind that it would do some of this work in psula. Vahacho. And this is the case, delo efshar, v'kamikavein. It's a case, it was unavoidable because he needs to put it together with the team. He needs the child to nurse from the mother. He needs to put them in there. V'kamikavein, he intends for it to do disha, to thresh. V'ktani psula. And the Mishnah says that that disqualifies it. So it's a case here of lo efshar and mitkavein. And nevertheless, we say psula. So if that's the case, then that supports the position in the second Lashon, lo efshar and mitkavin is asur. That sounds like either it's Rabbi Shimon or it's Rabbi Yehuda, Alibi the Rabbah, who says it's asur. For Abaye, he cannot explain this inside of Rabbi Yehuda. The truth is, he could just say this is Rabbi Shimon and he wouldn't have a problem. But he wants to answer in terms of Rabbi Yehuda as well. And therefore, he's going to give another answer. Now, Tosafot said again before, it says, time at Parah Duma, Rashi says it's talking about an Egla Rufa. Negla Rufa has the same requirement that no work be done with it. The reason that Rashi probably says that is because the Gemara is going to bring Psukim to prove this, and the Psukim are from Egla Rufa. Now, there is a Hekesh between them that makes their din the same, but nevertheless, since they brought the Psukim from there, that's what Rashi says. But in the Tosefta, it sounds like it's talking about a Para Aduma. So he says, Shani Atam, it's different over there, because it says, Asher Lu Ubad Ba Mikol Makom. Any work done by it is problematic. Since it used the term Ubad, which is even the passive form of the verb, then it means no matter what the work is that's done by it, intentional, unintentional, it's problematic. Where it says, if that's the case, then why in the case where you put it into the rivaka and it was dasha, where he had no intent for it, do we say it's kshera? If any work that it does, no matter what, is problematic, then why isn't the resha also problematic? So halo dami alalaha. No, the resha is similar to this other case that we find in the Mishnah and Parah, which is, Shachen aleha of. If you have a bird that rests on top of the animal, kshera. Ala aleha zachar. If a male mounts it, psula. Then it's problematic. My taima. What's the reason for that? So Rav Papa comes to explain the reasoning behind this Mishnah, which will also explain the difference in the previous Mishnah between why in this latter case where he had kavanah it's problematic, and why in the first case where he did not have kavanah that it was okay. Because Ktiv, Pasuk says, avad. Avad is the active form of the verb, vikarinan avad. Had the Torah written the word avad in the active form, and it was pronounced that way, ad avid bayu, then until he physically does it or pushes the animal to do the work, then it would be problematic, because that's the active form of the verb. It means that the owner would have to make the animal do the work in order for it to be classified as work. Iktiv, had the Torah written the word ubad, which is the passive form of the verb, vikarinan ubad, and you read it as the passive form of the verb, then afilu memela nami. Then, no matter how the work was done, meaning even if a bird lands on its back, or he puts it into a team of oxen and ends up threshing, then it'd also be problematic because the requirement is simply that ubad, that work was done by it, no matter how it was done. Hashta dichtiv, but the problem, or it's not really a problem, but this is the result of what happens here, is that the pasuk writes it as avad. The word is spelled ayin vet dalid, which without nekudot you would pronounce as avad, which is the active form of the verb. Vikarinan, but we have a mesora that the kri of that word is ubad, the passive form. So therefore, they darshin ubad dumya da'avad, that the passive work done by the animal has to be similar to the active form of the work. Ma avad denechle, obviously if he's pressing the animal to work, then that's what he wants. Af ubad denechle, similarly, when it's in the passive form of the verb, it has to be something that the owner wants. Has to be something that he desires. It's very similar to a drusha that we have by Hechsher, by Mashkim. There the Torah writes Itain, and it's pronounced Yutan. And the Gemara there darshans also that it should be Yutan Dumya de Itain. That the placement in the passive form, if it happens by itself, has to be similar to Itain, which is that the owner wants it to happen. So similarly over here, the Ubad that happens, if the work happens by itself, the animal by itself ends up doing work unintentionally, then only if the owner wants that to transpire will it be considered work. But if the owner doesn't want or he didn't intend for that work, then it's not problematic. And that's the differentiation here. When the bird sits on the back of the animal, yes, it's doing work passively, meaning that nobody's engaging it in work, but it happens to be carrying something on its back. But the owner doesn't need that. He doesn't care about the bird sitting on its back. He doesn't want that. On the other hand, Allah alayhi zakhar, if the male mounts the animal, that's what the owner wants. He wants his animals to reproduce. And by reproducing, that is a benefit to him. So even though it doesn't happen with his guidance necessarily, it happens by itself, then it's considered to be problematic because it's something that is nechale, something that he wants. And similarly, on the previous Samud, the same thing will be true here. Where he puts it in a team and it goes in and threshes, over there he didn't care about the threshing. He didn't want it to thresh. Therefore, even though it happened by itself, he's not going to be considered as if it worked. On the other hand, where he intends for it to thresh, and it goes in and does it by itself, he doesn't direct it, but it happens to do it, then it will be problematic. So that's the basic idea here, that there is such a concept of passive work being done, but it has to have the acquiescence or the approval of the owner. Tosfot asks a beautiful question over here, a fundamental question. We're talking about a para aduma. Para aduma is expensive. It's worth a ton of money. If this animal, if this zakhar comes here and mounts the animal, it's now disqualified from being a para aduma. He's going to lose everything. So which owner would ever have in mind that he wants the animal to mount this animal and he's going to lose everything? He's going to lose his para aduma. Who would ever have that in mind? So Tosafot says something here that's very important. He says, V'yishlamar, dim nemar k'shira havanechale, ulekach en l'hakshira. Because without the halachic restriction over here, if we looked at this in the abstract and we said, does the owner want this male to mount the female? The answer would be yes in the abstract. The only reason he doesn't want it to mount the female over here is because of the halachic requirement that a para aduma not do work. And so it's the halacha that's stopping him, not his real will. His real will or his real desire is for the animal to reproduce and for the male to mount the female. And therefore, it's going to be considered as if he wants it, even though there's a huge mitigating factor here, which is the loss of the para aduma. This plays very heavily. There is an unbelievable tshuva from Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach has a tshuva with regards to refrigerators on Shabbat. What happens when you leave on the light inside the refrigerator? You left it on for Shabbat by accident. Now you want to open up the refrigerator. So what is that considered? It's called a pasuk reshe. It's pasuk reshe because when you open the door, automatically the light's going to on. But it's a pasuk reshe to lo nechle. You don't want the light to come on because if the light comes on, you can't open it on Shabbat. So there were those that wanted to claim that according to the Aruch, who says pasuk reshe to lo nechle is mutar, that should be mutar. And even according to the other Rishonim who say it's asur, it's only asur midrabanan. So there should be dispensations from it. Rav Shlomo Zalman quotes in the Gemara here as well as in the Gemara in Baba Metzia as well, and Tosafot says the same thing over there, but this, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach quotes this Tosafot, and he says, tell me the truth. If it wasn't Shabbat, and you open up the refrigerator, wouldn't you want the light to go on? The answer is yes. The only reason you don't want the light on to go on is because of the halachic Isser of Shabbat. That's not considered to be lo nechale. Just like Tosafot says over here, that the fact that it's going to ruin the para aduma is not considered to be lo nechale over here. So too, the fact that the light coming on in Shabbat is only a problem because it's Shabbat. During a weekday, you'd love the light to come on. You could see in the refrigerator. It's much better. So that fact is not considered to be lo nechale, and it becomes a pasuk reshe de nechale. And that's why if the light's left on in the refrigerator on Shabbat, you can't open it up. And according to Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach, that would be an isur d'oraita because it's a pasuk reshe de nechale, because that's something that he wants to happen. And it's not a pasuk reshe de lo nechale. It's an important derivative of this Tosafot over here. Tosafot does ask another question, which is that we find in the Mishnayot in Parah about a Parah Aduma that's pregnant. How could you ever have a Parah Aduma that's pregnant if we say over here, as soon as it's mounted by a male, that it's problematic? So there are two possibilities. He gives two answers over here. It's only if the mounting happened with the owner pushing that to happen. That's one possibility. In the cases in the Mishnayot and Parah are cases where the owner is not involved in the reproduction. Or the other possibility, which is interesting, similar to Hechsher Mashkim, the owner has to give his acquiescence or approval why the action is in place. Meaning that while the male is mounting the female, he has to say, oh, that's great, you know, I want them to reproduce. But if the act happens and only after the fact he knows about it, his approval after the fact may not be meaningful. It has to be while that avodah is happening that he has to give approval. And that's how we'll get this possibility of Parah Aduma being pregnant and not being disqualified for avodah. Okay, so now the Gemara continues and brings another try to prove to this case of Hana Baal Korcho. Tashma, avodah. You have something that was lost. The person picked up an avodah, so now he's responsible to take care of it. Lo yishtachena lo agabi mita v'lo agabi magod l'tzorcho. He may not spread it out for his own benefit on a bed or on a hook, on a peg that's in the wall or a clothing frame. If he wants it for his own benefit, he certainly can't do it because it's not his. On the other hand, but if it's for the benefit of the clothing, to shake it out, to air it out, to get it dusted off, then he is permitted to do it. So if, basic principle here, if it's for the benefit of the avodah itself, the lost item itself, of course he can do it. If it's his own personal benefit, then he can't do it because it's not his to do that with. And nizdam lo orchim. All of a sudden he has guests that come over. Lo yishtachana, he cannot spread it out. Lo agabi mita v'lo agabi magot. He can't put it out, whether it's on the bed or whether it's on the peg. Ben letzorcha, whether it's for the benefit of the avodah itself. Ben letzorcho, whether for his benefit. So now, in terms of his benefit, we know what the problem is, because it's not his. But in a case where it's a benefit for the item itself, why don't we say that that's fine? It's the benefit of the item, he's allowed to do it. Just because he has guests over, why does that disqualify him? So here it's a case where Lo Afshar, because he needs to take care of this Aveda, so he's putting it out. But it's a case where he's Mitkavein, that when he puts it out, even though it's for the benefit of the Aveda itself, he still wants the other people to see it and think it's his. And since he wants them to see it and think it's his, then it's a case of Mitkavein. So this is a case of Delo Afshar Umitkavein, and we're saying Asur again. So again, either this could be authored by Rabbi Shimon, or, if Abai is going to explain this within the position of Rabbi Yehuda, we have to explain over here why it's Asur, even though it's a case of Lo Afshar and Mitkavein. So he says, Shani Hotam, says the case is different over here, De Kali Lo, because it's a case where he is actively destroying it. He's actively burning it up. What do you mean he's actively burning it up? One of two possibilities. Imishum Ein Abisha, because he's exposing it to the Ayin Hara, he's spreading it out when guests come over, and they're going to be jealous, or they're going to be like, wow, about this, and it's going to cause an ayin hara to come to this object. Oh, imishum ganve, possibility that some of his guests are thieves. And by placing it out in front of them, now he's opening it up to the possibility that it'll be taken or stolen by them. So this is an interesting Gemara, but the Gemara says when you expose your friend's money or objects to this possibility of being stolen or being exposed to the ayin hara, it's the equivalent of actively destroying it. And so because of that, that's why you're held culpable over here, or that's why you're not allowed to do it. Not because it's a classic case of Lo Afshar and Mitkavein. This is a case where it's a exposure or as if you're actively destroying it. And that's why we won't allow it in this case. All right, next proof. Tashma, Mochrek Sut. People who are selling clothing. But they're selling clothing that is Kilayim. So first of all, it's Mutar to sell clothing that's Kilayim. There's no problem. There's no Easter against trafficking in Kilayim. You can't sell it to a Jew, but you can sell it to non-Jews. The only time there's a restriction in a Jew selling kilayim is when it's lost inside the bag, when it's not known or it's not obvious that it's kilayim. In that case, you may not sell it to the Nachri, because the Nachri may then go and sell it to another Jew, and the Jew will think it's fine because it came from the first Jew. So in cases where the kilayim is obvious, and there's no questions about the fact that he's selling kilayim, it's mutar to traffic in it. So these people are selling ksut kilayim. Mochrim kedarkam. They can sell it the normal way. What does it mean, the normal way? Is that they usually show their wares. They put the clothing on their back. They carry it around. So they are wearing the kilayim in order to show it to the customers. As long as he doesn't have intention when it's hot outside that this should protect him from the sun, B'gshamim, or if it's raining out or it's cold out, mipnei gshamim, that it shouldn't protect it from the cold or the rain. So as long as he's not intending to use it as a piece of clothing simply to show it to the customers, then it's fine. Vatznuim, those who are makpid al ha-mitzvot, meaning that they shy away from things that are even on the borderline of Isur. Mashilin achorim b'makel, they use a stick to hold it up over their back so it never literally rests on them. They basically put it on an equivalent of a mannequin, but they basically hold it up with a stick over their back so it never really rests on their shoulders, but it looks like they're wearing it. Now, v'ha-hacha, this is a case, de'efshar le'maved k'tznuim. The people in the reisha who are not the tznuim, they have a choice about what to do. They can either do it the normal way, k'darkan, or they can do it like the tznuim and put it up on a makel. V'chilo mikavein. And over here it says, if he's not mikavein, mutar. Shari, it's totally mutar. So here's a case of efshar velo mitkavein. And we say here that it's mutar. So the Gemara says, to yufta, the man detani lishna kama, derova to yufta. Then according to the lishna kama, this is problematic. Because in the lishna kama, we said if it's efshar and lo mitkavein, there Rabbi Yehuda says it's asur. But Rabbi Shimon said it was mutar according to Abaye, and asur according to Rova. So according to Abaye, this works fine. Who's the author of this Mishnah? Rabbi Shimon. Whereas according to Rova, who's the author of the Mishnah? There's nobody left to be the author of the Mishnah, because both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon thinks it's problematic when it's efshar. And so therefore this dismisses or undermines the Lishna Kama, and says to us that the Lishna Batra is the proper way to approach here. And so the Lishna Batra, again, will say that in cases of efshar and mitkavein, so in a case of efshar mitkavein, everybody agrees it's asur. In a case of lo efshar and lo mitkavein, everybody agrees it's mutar. In the case of efshar and lo mitkavein, and lo efshar and mikavein, there we have the machloket Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. In the case of efshar lo mitkavein, we have a classic machloket. Rabbi Yehuda says asur because it's davar sheinu mitkavein is asur. Rabbi Shimon says it's mutar because davar sheinu mitkavein is mutar. In the case of lo efshar and mitkavein, Rabbi Shimon's going to say it's asur because kavanah matters. And if you're mitkavein for it, it matters. According to Rabbi Yehuda, we have the machloket between Abai and Rava. Abai will say it's mutar because Rabbi Yehuda says mitkavein doesn't matter. It's a case of lo efshar and therefore it's fine. And Rava says no. Rabbi Yehuda still thinks mitkavein is problematic. He just says when it's the chumra, then lo mitkavein doesn't help you. And that'll be the way that we'll set up the machloket here between Abai and Rava. It'll be within the position of Rabbi Yehuda in lo efshar and mitkavein. Alright, now the Gemara continues and says about the chametz, about the isra'ana, lo yasikba at the tanur, that you're not allowed to fire up the oven with this. Tan Rabbanan, tanur shisiko beklipe orla o bekashim shel kilei akerem. So a tanur that was fired up with klipe orla, these are the skins or the shells of orla. As Rashi points out over here, in the orla, we're talking about certain fruits, whether it's a pomegranate or other fruits where they have a soft enough shell that you could burn it. Because by orla, there's a din, only the pri is asur. It has to be the fruit itself that's asur. Whereas by the kilei akerem, there's no din of fruit. The word pri is never mentioned there. And therefore, even kashim, even anything that's a product of the kilei akerem is problematic. So that's why the Mishnah terms them differently. One is klipei orla, and the other one is kashim shel kilei akerem. Both of them are itzurei hana'ah, chadash. If this is a brand new oven, and this is the first time you're firing it, meaning basically you're putting it in the kiln and it's hardening here, yutatz, you must break it. Yashan, if it's an older oven and you heated it up with this, yutzan, you cool it back down, and then you can now refire it with something that is mutar. So the difference being, obviously, that if it's chadash, it's brand new, and you fire it with the isur, that is what's creating the gemar kli, and that will be permanently a part of anything you do with this tanur. This isur will be there because it's what caused the oven to be hardened. On the other hand, by yashan, if the oven's already hardened, then when you're heating it up each time, the only benefit you're getting is the heat that's created in each instance. So that heat that's created, all you have to do is remove the heat, and now you can move on. So yutzan, you cool it off. Afabo et apat. If you cooked a loaf of bread inside of this oven with the isurei hana. Rabbi omer apat asura. Rabbi says the pat is problematic. Hachamim omerim apat muteret. That the bread is fine. Bishla gabe gichalim divi akol mutar. Everybody agrees if you bake it on top of the coals that it's mutar because the isur is no longer extant. It's now in a coal form. It's already been destroyed. And any heat that's coming in the coals is coming from heter and no longer coming from isur. So I'm just going to lay out the basic understanding of this Mishnah. First of all, Rabbi believes that the pat is asura because what we call shvach itzim bapat. you are finding the benefit of the wood that is being burned here is now inside the bread. You burnt Isurei Hana'ah, and now the bread has a portion of that Isur inside of it, and that's what caused the problem. On the other hand, the Chachamim say it's fine because there's no such thing as Shvach Etzim Bapat. Once they burn the wood no longer exists. Or the Isurei Hana'ah over here, once they are burnt, they are no longer extant, and whatever is in the bread is not the Isur itself. It's the heat or the product of that, and it's not a problem. Now, as far as the Reisha, part of the Chadash Yutatz, Yashan Yutzan, that has to do with a principle that the Gemara is going to introduce now, which is called Ze Veze Goreim. When you have two items that cause something to happen. Now, when you have this new oven over here, if you fire it up in the kiln with this Isurei Hana'ah, and it's completed with the Isurei Hana'ah, whenever you use this oven from now on, one of the Gormim, one of the items that causes the oven to function is that it was fact that it was finished be isur. On the other hand, every time you fire it up, you're going to fire it up with heter as well. Because now if you put regular wood into the oven, the heat that's created inside of this oven is caused by two things. One is the oven itself being solid, and number two is the new wood that's put in there. So that's what we call ze b'ze goreim. You have a goreim of isur, which is the fact that the oven was finished be isur. And you have a goreim of heter, which is that there's new wood in there that is of heter. So now, Zeb Zeb Goreim, according to this Tanakam over here, is Asur. It's problematic, and therefore you have to break the oven. Yashan, with the older oven, again, there's only one Goreim here. Every time you heat the oven, the Goreim is what you heated the oven with. So as soon as you cool it off, all you have to do is bring in the new wood and use it again. The problem now is we have another Braito, Vatanya. Ben Chadash, Ben Yashan Yutzan. Whether it's a new oven or an old oven, you let it cool down. So how do we reconcile between these two Braitos? Lokasha, Harabi, Harabonon. We'll say that the latter Braita is authored by the Rabbonon, and the first Braita is authored by Rabbi. So the Gemara says, Imur Dishmaitle the Rabbi Mishum Dishvach Etzim Bapat. Okay, we understand by Rabbi that we understand this idea that because when you directly cook the bread with the Isurei Hana'ah, then we believe that a portion of the Isurei Hana'ah is now found inside the bread, and that is problematic. That's what makes it Asur. Zev Zegorim Mishmaitle. But we never heard from Rabbi this idea of Zev Zeh Goreim. By the oven, you're not going to eat the oven. So therefore, even if it was finished be Isur, the fact that you're not going to consume the oven means that even if there's Shvach Etzim in the oven, it doesn't matter. Because the next time you heat it up to cook the bread, there's going to be Heter there. And that becomes a case of Zev Zeh Goreim. We know from Rabbi's position within the Braito that he thinks that there is Shvach Etzim Bapat, but that doesn't tell us anything about his position about Zev Zeh Goreim. And therefore, how are you so certain that Rabbi is the author of that position that says Chadash Yutatz and Yashan Yutzan? According to the Chachamim, we know. The Chachamim believe that nothing of Isur is coming about from burning of the Isur Hana'ah. So we can understand why they're the authors of the second Braita, which is that you just always have to let it cool off. You always let it cool off because Zeh B'Zeh Goreim is Mutar. So in the case of a new one, Zeh B'Zeh Goreim is Mutar, B'diyevet, not the Chadchila. We're not going to tell you to do that Chadchila, but if you did finish it off with this Isur, then when you bring in the heter, it's no problem. On the other hand, the second case of, again, Yutzan by Yashan, which I mentioned before, is even if you think Zev Zeh Goreim is mutar, we'd rather let you cool it off and then heat it up with something that's heter. Then you could have just cooked with this oven, no problem at all. Now, truthfully, if you say Zev Zeh Goreim is mutar, could have just cooked with it because each time you heat it up, the oven was finished originally with heter, and now you're heating it up with heter. It would be Zev Zeh Goreim and it'd be mutar. Nevertheless, we say let it cool off because there's no loss by letting it cool off. The only thing you lose is the heat created by the Isurei Hana'ah, and we don't have any problem with that. Having you lose that, we have no problem, and therefore we're going to tell you to let it cool off. Why heat it up with the Isur and let you use the Isur? Let it cool off, and then we'll force you to use that which is heter. Mara says, okay, Ela lo kasha. No, we'll have to ascribe the authorship of these two Braito to someone else. Ha Rebbe Eliezer, ha Rabbanon. Again, the second Braito is the Rabbanon, as we explained. The first Braita will be the position of Rabbi Eliezer, who holds Zeh B'Zeh Goreim is Asur. So the Gemara wants to know, hey Rabbi Eliezer, which Rabbi Eliezer, which position of Rabbi Eliezer says that Zeh B'Zeh Goreim is Asur? Ilema Rabbi Eliezer de Seor. If you think it's Rabbi Eliezer from this Mishnah in Orla, which is Tan, Seor Shel Chulin, Vishel Truma. If you have Seor, you have a leavening agent, one part of it is Chulin, and one part of it is Truma. Shenaflu L'Tochisa, and they fall into bread. And they leaven the bread. Vein bezek de'lachmit, vein bezek de'lachmit. Each one individually does not have enough to cause the bread to rise. So each leavening agent by itself is not sufficient. Together they are sufficient. Vinitztarfu, if they get together, v'chimtzu, and they cause it to rise. Rebbe Eliezer omer, achar acharon ani ba. I go after the last one that fell in. If Isur was the last one, it's asur. If Heter was the last one, then it's mutar. Chmim ben shenafal yisur lechatchila or bitchila ben shenafal yisur besof l'olam einu asur ad shehei bo kedei lehachmit. Chmim believe that until there's enough of a leavening agent within the isur, or here within the truma, to make it that way, we don't worry about it. Because if it's mitzaref with something else, it's as if it doesn't exist. It's as if it didn't have sufficient ability to do it by itself. So it's clear the Chachamim believe ze goreim, ze goreim. You have two goreim over here that it's mutar. Because here you have half the goreim being mutar, half the goreim being asur. Chachamim say that's not problematic. The question is, what is the position of Rabbi Eliezer? V'amar Abai. Abai explains the position of Rabbi Eliezer. Lo shanu elo shekadam misileg da isur. That's only if he pulled out the isur. Meaning, if he takes the isur out, and then the heter falls in, then Rabbi Eliezer says it's fine. Avalo kadam misileg da isur. On the other hand, if he left the isur in, and then the heter falls in and finishes it off, asur. Alma, zev zegurim asur. You see from Eliezer's position that zev zegurim is problematic. Because the way Abai is explaining Rabbi Eliezer, the only time he thinks it's mutar is if you took the Isur out, and then afterwards the heter came in and finished it off by itself. Since it finished it off by itself, it's mutar. But if they're there together, it would be problematic. Gemara says, umimai, the time of Rabbi Eliezer ke Abai. Who says Abai is right over here? Who says that Abaye's position is mukrach within Rabbi Eliezer? Dilma time of the Rabbi Eliezer mishom the achar charona niba. Maybe the real answer or the real position Rabbi Eliezer has to do with whichever comes last dictates. So lo shna kadam v'silekat isur, lo shna lo kadam v'silekat isur. It doesn't matter if he took it out or he didn't take it out. Whatever falls last, whatever causes the leavening of the bread, that is what dictates over here. Avabat achat, had they fallen together, hakanami deshori, then it would be mutar. So the only reason that it is asur over here is because we go after the last item. But when they fall together and it's zeh v'zeh goreim, then we would say it's mutar. So this cannot be the source. Okay, we'll stop here and continue tomorrow with the Gemara search for the source of Rabbi Eliezer's position.